This is the Unregistered Podcast, and I'm Thaddeus Russell. This is a show about ideas, people, and behaviors that are considered inappropriate, out of bounds, or beyond the pale. The things you're not supposed to talk about if you're a school teacher, a college professor, a businessman, a politician, a parent, a neighbor, or even a podcast host. These are the things you're not supposed to say or even think if you're a good liberal, a good conservative, or a good citizen. Each week, I'll interview a person who has something bad to say. They might be a journalist or a professor. They might be a porn star or a drug dealer. They might just be an ordinary person with an ordinary job who doesn't care about the rules of polite society. I'm not interested in breaking the rules just to be a troublemaker. I'm interested in people who break the rules of conventional thought and who expand the scope of what is possible to say in our society. I'm interested in people who make me think. In April of 2016, I was flown to Atlanta to be a guest on a podcast that was hosted by Killer Mike, the great rapper of Run the Jewels, who was also at that time emerging as a major public intellectual. Mike's podcast was on the history of Reconstruction after the Civil War, and in particular, the history of Black resistance to white racist violence. So I was flown to Atlanta to be interviewed by Mike for this podcast. It turned out to be one of the greatest conversations I've ever had, and I was so excited to know that this would soon be public. But unfortunately, for many reasons I still don't know, that podcast was never aired, never produced, and no one would tell me why this interview was not being released. For years and years and years, I begged and cajoled the two producers of the show for that audio so that I could release it myself. Well, finally, last week, I heard from one of the producers that I could, in fact, release that audio interview on my own show. And so here it is for patrons of Unregistered. This is my interview with Killer Mike.
I was just saying Michael Render or Killer Mike, talking to people about interesting facts and historical moments during and post Reconstruction. If you guys have been listening, you guys have heard me say many a time, so where the story is at when Black people shot back? And today we brought someone in to talk about it. Thaddeus Russell, who is a history professor and has a book. What's the title?
A Renegade History of the United States.
And I'm going to do a lot more shutting up this time around because you're talking about the stuff that I'm really interested in. I believe that any group of people that are oppressed or enslaved or repressed at all will develop, if they don't already have it, the will to fight or the will to oppress. The human spirit doesn't lie down easily.
Not always, but in this case, it was true, right? Yeah. I mean, since the beginning, since really during the Civil War, I mean, Black people were fighting back with guns, with knives, with their fists. And that went on for more than 100 years. Yeah. Right? I think of it as a 100-year war.
Yeah.
In which, you know, we're usually taught that it was a one-sided war, that there were the white oppressors who killed a lot of Black people and the Black people were victims. Not true at all.
Yeah.
There's never a moment in that 100 years, even the depths of Jim Crow and lynching, when Black people weren't fighting back and often winning, you know. And, of course, the big story of that war is that Black people ultimately really won. Yeah. Right, after taking a lot of casualties, but they won overall, right? And that's a story that's rarely told for a lot of interesting reasons.
Why?
Great question, which I guess I actually asked myself. I think it has to do with, I'm going to say it, I think it has to do with liberalism. I think it has to do with white liberals who have controlled the academy for about 50 years now. I think that their politics has been mostly, not entirely, but mostly about making Black people into victims so that they, white liberals, can take care of them.
Gotcha.
So, you know, beginning with the Great Society programs, the welfare state in the 1960s, right? That was really the discourse coming out of white liberals was, here's these victims that we need to take care of. We need to raise up and make like us.
Yeah.
right? To assimilate them into our culture, right? Yeah. Which to me is a different form of white supremacy.
Gotcha.
Right? Which is not the violent Ku Klux Klan white supremacy. It's the white supremacy of, oh, well, of course you want to be like us because our culture is the best.
It's the Indian school version.
Exactly. Like the Carlisle school. Exactly. Right. Yeah. So applied to blacks. Beginning with the Civil War. I mean, so with the contraband camps in the Civil War, you had the Union soldiers instituting these rules for the slaves who came there. It said, we're not going to put you up and protect you and give you food and shelter and clothing unless you adopt our rules of behavior, our culture. If you had to be Christians the way we're Christians, you had to be married. That was a rule. You couldn't be taken care of by the Union Army in the contraband camps unless the slaves were married. And a lot of the slaves wanted to be married, but many didn't want to be married.
So the contraband camps were essentially refugee camps.
They were refugee camps for
enslaved Africans that are now escaping.
Who were liberated from the plantations, right?
Gotcha.
And so people think of that as just this wonderful moment where the Union Army is taking care of the slaves. And in part it was because they did offer protection from the Confederates.
Yeah.
But they also had all these rules that were essentially trying to make the slaves white. And that was that's another major story of Reconstruction that to me is never told or not told nearly enough.
So tell it. I mean, it's worth telling, even, you know, because I want to talk about, of course, the rebellions and things.
Yeah.
But this is, I'm one of those black people who's very pro-Constitution on a lot of things, especially Second Amendment.
Sure.
I'm from the South, so there's a fierce history here of hunting and fishing and of conservatism. Now, I'm not going to sit here and, you know, push presidential candidates at you as much as I'm saying that prior to the welfare state, what I've learned, because I was raised by people who were born in 1922 and 1932, my grandparents, black people were very self-sufficient. My grandmother was educated not because of public schools, but because of the Methodist Church, because she was Methodist. Her family had been a victim of the Tuskegee experiment, and in the monies that they saved from sharecropping and got from that, they bought their own land. Hence making them sellers to the merchants in the stores there. So, you know, their life was a little different. Wasn't better, but than any other hardworking farming society, but it certainly wasn't, they were no welfare case for anyone. So my grandparents were very adamant about us not being that, you know, and I learned that becoming dependent upon the state was a relatively new thing for black people in the last 40, 50 years only.
Hmm.
So I'd like to know more about that as we go into the armed rebellion, because if you're willing to arm yourself and shoot back, you got to be willing, well, you got to know you can take care of yourself.